This is Don Letts, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra. Stay tuned.
The views expressed by on-air volunteer hosts do not reflect the views of Wavefarm or WGXC. WGXC is nonpartisan and does not endorse or support political candidates. To participate in WGXC's on-air dialogue, dial 518-622-2598 to either call in live to the studio or record a 3-minute message for broadcast expressing your point of view, or send an email to info@wgxc.org.
The Catskill Food Pantry is located in the Parish Hall of St. Luke's Episcopal Church at 50 William Street in Catskill. The pantry is open to the public every Friday from 1 to 4 p.m. Healthy food is a right. For more information, please feel welcome to visit the pantry, call us at 551-299-2456, check the website at catskillfoodpantry.org, or connect with us on Facebook at Catskill Food Pantry.
Wavefarms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Jess Puglisi of Mellonville, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Take your Wellingtons off, children, and Mammy will tell you a pleasant story.
Good evening, it's Kevin Factor here, and you're listening to Foraging Ahead. Tonight on Foraging Ahead, a conversation with three young people, Francesca, David, and Sophie. They are 23, 24, and 25, respectively. They just talk about life as they see it, post-college, and their generation. They are the first generation to grow up almost entirely online. Not online, but with access to the internet. The irony of the digital age is that its promise to connect us has actually left most people feeling disconnected. And this very self-aware group of young people, and perhaps even their entire generation, is coming to terms with that. And of all the things that they really hope for and are working towards, community is a priority, building friendships and relationships. They are empathetic, cynical, ironic, in turn generous and kind and a little bit biting. We're going to hear their attitudes on older generations and also their thoughts on the generation following them, Gen Alpha. But worth a listen, hearing what the youths have to say. This is Francesca, David, and Sophie.
Your generation is
Gen Z.
You're solid Gen Z.
Solid Gen Z.
We're all solid Gen Z.
Yeah.
And The Economist described your generation as more educated, well-behaved, stressed, and depressed generation in comparison to previous generations. Do you have any sense of that?
Yep.
That sounds right. Right? Sorry. Yeah. Well educated. Behaved is interesting to me.
I was also thinking that.
Yeah, more educated. That's interesting.
We are more educated. More depressed feels completely true, right?
Yes.
More educated and depressed feels also like they go hand in hand.
How so?
I feel like that's a, you know, common sentiment of, like, ignorance is bliss. And
but also that the more education you have, the more time that you're spent living in a really sheltered structure of life.
Yeah.
Right.
And the less time that you have after that to sort of brave waters for yourself. Like, yeah.
So what surprised you the most, like, at graduating college? Like, what were your expectations, or did you have any expectations, and what was the reality of your first years, months after graduating college?
I think the first thing that I felt was that it had gone by really quickly, and everyone told me the entire time while I was in college that it was going to go by really quickly, and I didn't believe them. And then as soon as it happened, I was like, oh my god, whoa, that was like so short. That
right.
was such a short amount of time. And now it's just like this landscape of like decades ahead.
Right.
Yeah.
And I honestly, I don't see a way, like I can't fathom how to better prepare oneself for that.
Yeah.
Like it almost feels like there's not a way that you just have to dive into it. Right.
Prepare yourself for what?
Just like the fact that college ends on a random Sunday, and like your life as the way you know it will never be the same again.
Yeah.
And there's no way to prepare for it. Like, yeah, it goes by so fast.
A random Sunday is how it feels.
Yeah. I would say I was not surprised, but like hadn't really considered how much I relied on the structure of like college or high school or education or whatever. And my first job after school was very, very unstructured. Like it was kind of an office job, but I had to be alone a lot of the time in this big office. I was working at this film company, and there were no meetings, there were no whatever. So I would often like sort of go into this office from 10 to 6 ish and have almost nothing to do and just be completely left to my own devices, and like very quickly drove myself crazy. Like I think like being so immediately unreleased from structure of I have class and then I have my activity and then I have class and then I have dinner with my friends or I'm going to see everybody I know and I have my nighttime party. Like all of that being so built into the schedule was something that I really took for granted, and having to sort of architect that for yourself after school, particularly if you're not in like a super corporate job that has a lot of built-in structure and training and programs, was, I guess, kind of a shock to the system.
Right. And college is a pre-made community for you. Like, you don't really, you have to do some of the work, but it's like so laid out for you. I mean, you walk around Middlebury where there's 2,300 of the same people every day, and like, you know almost everyone you see, and then the next day you're out in the world, and you'll never have that again.
And to that end, I think, like,
well,
my own experience, like, I've had some success, like, making friends on my own after school, or getting a job that I like, or even, like, doing some comedy stuff that I've enjoyed or whatever, but, like, I've yet to sort of replace that feeling of, like, a cohesive community that I'm, like, situated in. And that is, like, something that I feel like I'm going to chase. Like, that is
right.
something that's unique
Absolutely.
To college that I think is, like, truly a good...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels... I mean, the way that all three of us met each other was, like, so casual. It was just, like, we knew each other, we would see each other in passing, we joined groups, like...
Right.
But, like, the friendship that we made with each other was literally just, like, walking over to each other's dorms, hanging out, watching a movie, blah, blah, blah.
And it's the fact that everyone lives in a 1 square mile radius.
And the friendships that I have, or I've made since graduating college, it's like, if you want to be friends with someone, it takes just a tiny bit of effort, which just, there wasn't that in college. Yeah.
It didn't take any effort.
It's effortless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. And so what are some of the surprises, other than like the lack of community, which is interesting, that's the first thing that really came to your mind, that you're on your own, right? And that you didn't realize how much structure there was kind of built into your life. I mean, from kindergarten, from the moment all the way to this random Sunday,
right,
as you said, and everyone's like, okay, take it easy, look.
Mm-hmm.
But what were some of the most, what are the things that you've sort of learned or mastered in those few years after graduating and living in the quote real world? I mean, you're always living in the real world.
I feel like you have the most
mastery. Well, I'm the oldest.
Yeah.
I literally think with every year, you get. I think every year up until a certain point, and like literally, who knows? But it feels like every year until a certain point, you gain a little more mastery and confidence or whatever. What I was going to say to that is that I feel like I am really relishing and really trying to be aware of how much fun it is to not have responsibility to anyone other than yourself. That I'm really enjoying. Like, I had a great education. I was really lucky for that. It leveraged me into a job where I make not a crazy amount of money, but enough where I can pay my rent and go to meals with my friends sometimes and go out and, like, not really have too much of a care in the world beyond that, which is, like, really a privilege. But I'm really aware, especially, like, I work in an office with plenty of people who have kids or very different stages of life, and, like, really trying to relish my youth instead of lamenting that I'm not even younger.
Right.
Like...
Yeah, that is
awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're aware of your youth.
Yeah.
Well, because I think, like, we have all consumed not only a cycle of media, like in TV shows, about being young, but then with millennials, a cycle of TV shows and media that is about young people reflecting on their youth.
We're talking about girls.
Let's name names. Yeah. Or they're related to HBO Masterpiece Girls, which is about a group of people in roughly the same spheres that we're
who
in.
Met at a liberal arts college.
Who met at Oberlin College.
Who live in Brooklyn, which is where I live.
They live in cities and who are kind of aimless, and they, in the show Girls, are reflecting their lives through media of Sex and the City, of older shows. And at the time, I feel like by the time it got to us, it was just like the self-awareness is so draining. It's so, like, not the self-awareness, but like knowing that you're young. Make the most of it.
Mm-hmm. I also
feel that's maybe what's making our generation more depressed is this, like, pressure to kind of
maybe, but I don't know that that's specific to the circumstances of our generation,
right?
Like, I'm sure every generation has an older generation telling them that you're on. Like, not every generation has the political climate or the climate.
Yeah, the climate.
Oh yeah.
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 Deep sigh.
So, how do you think of your generation in comparison to other generations?
You guys are the first digital, right? The digital generation, the first generation to have the internet almost your entire lives, right? You're noted for that.
Mm-hmm.
And how? I don't know if you talk with your parents or people of older, older generations about when they were your age, or what are the, like, what is your sense of what it was like to be young in another era?
Sounded super fun.
Carefree.
Not being monitored.
Not being tracked by your parents.
Being able to track by your friends.
Not being tethered to, like, this is, like, the most basic take about the internet in the world, but not having any sort of, like, second version of yourself online that you're trying to curate.
Like, satellite use.
Yeah.
So crazy.
Not being able to not be reached sounds so nice.
Oh my god, can't fathom it.
Always, anytime anyone has ever wanted to get a hold of any of us, they've been able to. or we've had to consciously choose to either ignore them, which has repercussions later if you choose not to reply to a text, or reply in the moment, but to, like, live in a world where people can reach you.
Yeah. My parents were in the 90s in San Francisco when they were, like, in their 20s, and it sounds really fun. It sounds awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It sounded like people living freely.
Sounds like people had less existential dread.
Yeah.
So you have no idea what it's like to be unreachable.
No.
Yeah.
No. Huh.
Camping is like my best guess.
Yeah.
Have you felt that your whole lives that you were?
I feel like it was never a question. Like you hit your first phone and it's like, all right.
How old were you when you got your first smartphone?
I remember being like one of the last people around me to get a phone, and that was 7th grade, and it was like, wow, I'm really the last person, and that's what, 12, 13 years old.
I also think, frankly, that was a rapid change, like, within the few years that we were born.
Right.
Yeah.
I feel like when I was growing up, everyone would get phones maybe in, like, 7th, 8th grade.
Right.
But, I mean, I guess that's what you're saying, but.
Yeah.
Before that, you know, you have an iPod Touch or something, but, like, you have to connect to Wi-Fi, too, but you, like, pretend like you have a phone. The normal.
I do want to say something about my generation, our generation, and relationship to technology and social media, which is a hot take, but I believe should be said, which is that I do think that we are savvier, more self-aware, more diligent, and have better media literacy than many older generations who are using social media just as much.
Yeah.
Right.
I say this as someone who
absolutely
love them to death, with parents that are addicted to Instagram, parents that are on Facebook, parents that are whatever, and, like, a downside of growing up in such a digital age is that, like, we were all on social media when we were in middle school and high school, but also with that came some basic idea of education that, like, it's important to think critically about social media,
right.
It's important to think about who you're posting for, it's important to think about how social media is not reality. It's important to moderate it.
You see.
Yeah, it's quite literally. It's important to moderate it. It's important to self-control it. And, like, I don't think that older people who have just as much access and just as much liability to get addicted to social media have gotten that same kind of education. And so sometimes the, not condescension, but the, like, assumption that our generation is, like, the worst victim of it is, like, a little misguided.
Yeah. But that being said, I feel like every generation thinks that they're in a weird pocket of, like,
right.
We get it. We're the generation that, the ones after us are, like,
too
out of touch, and the ones before us are whatever. But that being said, I think that we have that literacy to some extent, as much as whatever you can, but the generation after us, Gen Alpha, like,
yeah.
I feel the way I think boomers feel about us.
Absolutely.
Towards Gen Alpha.
Being,
I'm
like,
so worried.
iPad at dinner situation for that has been completely normalized for all young children nowadays.
Terrifying.
Genuinely super terrifying.
What?
The fact that every restaurant you go to, if there's a kid at the dinner table, it's going to be on an iPad.
Eyes glazed.
No questions asked.
See, when I first saw that, I was absolutely horrified.
Everyone is. It's a horrifying thing.
Those kids' brains are getting mushed, I think.
Yeah.
Really early on.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, there's money to be made.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
On that. So you guys look at Gen Alpha and go...
But we honestly, not the way that they're, like, there's no...
Exactly.
I feel so bad for them, and I feel like they've been so screwed over by whatever generation is, like,
Yeah.
But how did you come to media literacy, or how did you learn these lessons of you got to know who's going to be seeing this and how you're going to curate your, what did you call it, satellite self, and like, is that you? Is it not you? Is it part of you? Is it the best of you, or is it just like, how did you come to that awareness?
Mm-hmm.
Was it overtly taught, or you just sort of through trial and error figure it out? Or
well, there was some great, I mean, like, I feel like I have fond memories, and it's always nice to bond with people over, like, early usage of Instagram, where I was posting insane things.
Yeah.
As a 13-year-old.
Yeah, 13-year-old. Totally unfettered access to post whatever.
I feel like unrestricted access to the internet at a young age, like, is one of the core foundations of my personality.
Yeah.
Just, like, taking a picture of, like, a lamp and being like, getting some bright ideas, post that on Instagram.
Literally.
Put that on there. Like,
yeah.
Everyone needs to see that. Just any thought, anything that I had for, like, the first couple months of Instagram, it was all on there. And it was, I think it was, like, a crash course.
And just getting to roam the world, like, not only social media, but just, like, surfing the web as, like, a younger person is just, like, being able to move anonymously in the world.
Mm.
And people don't know that you're a kid. You have the world at your fingertips, and it's your own world. None of the adults can even fathom what you're doing on there, and you could be, like, watching really horrific stuff, or, like, learning stuff that you never would have come across. I mean, maybe in a book.
To answer your question, because it feels... I would be misrepresenting not to say this. I went to a school that taught us a media literacy class.
Whoa.
Sorry. Sorry, haters.
That's so funny.
Yeah. So I took a media literacy class when I was, like, in fifth grade, which gotta hand it to my progressive California school. Hit the nail right on the head with that one.
Yeah.
And also 11 was, like, a really great age for that, probably. And obviously social media then doesn't look like what it is now. There was no TikTok, there was no use of, like, AI-generated content. Like, you don't have to deal with any of that stuff. But, like, it was instilled in me, like, the very basic idea that, like, you should regulate how much you're online point blank.
Yeah.
And not everything is what you see and people are posting online. Like,
because that used to be
simple.
Really,
like,
normal common messaging that has kind of been abandoned.
Totally.
Because I feel like, you know, people, we're too far gone. If you assume that there's...
Well, it's been totally abandoned, that message.
The idea that, like, you should literally
be careful on the internet.
Be careful on the internet.
Which is so funny, because I remember...
Information to strangers.
Yeah.
Like,
in high school, I remember, like, my friends and I would make fun of... There was a classic type of cartoon, a political cartoon, that was, like, somebody on their phone walking into a, like, open manhole cover.
Classic.
There are so many, like cartoons or comics that were, like, about, like, you're injecting Twitter into your veins like it's heroin, and it was like, oh my god, these old people, like, don't understand, like, how awesome it is to be on your phone. But I feel like there's been a real, it's, that messaging is gone. It's sad.
Yeah. And it's also a shame that that messaging was only ever pointed at the users rather than, like,
exactly
the creators or the companies
or
the apps themselves or whatever, because, like, maybe if whatever anti-social media messaging there had been wasn't so, like, blame-oriented on people that are, like, addicted to this thing that's meant to be addictive. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, how would you message? Because we had the same sort of PSAs growing up, only with drugs.
Yeah.
Right? You know,
they've given up on that.
Yeah.
Kidding.
Well, we had the famous, this is your brain. This is your brain on drugs.
Unfortunately, so cool.
It was so fun.
Yeah.
Or DARE. Did you have DARE?
Yeah,
no.
DARE.
I mean, I know about it. But
I know.
Were we ever taught DARE?
We had a DARE program.
Oh,
we had
we had to learn the song.
A similar thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they had to swear.
D, I won't do drugs. A, I won't have an attitude. R, I will respect myself. E, I will educate me now.
Yeah.
Always love that.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible syntax.
I will educate me now.
That's nothing.
Yeah, and then they would say, like, oh, like, marijuana is just the worst thing, and, you know, it's a gateway drug, and then, you know, you find out, oh, it's kind of fun, and then all of a sudden you're like, well, if that's, you know, bull, well, maybe the rest of it is. Right? But how would you...
Proving that it is a gateway drug.
Yeah. Yeah. That's actually so funny.
Yeah.
Exactly the rhetoric that, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, all right, so let's say that they were right back then, and then they were right when you were younger, in terms of, like, injecting Twitter, or that, you know, spending time on the phone. How would you message Gen Alpha, or if it's not too late, or whatever? Like, what would be an effective message or program or policy? Because only just now phones are being banned in school.
Mm-hmm.
And people have known for
long.
Like, basically a year after smartphones
were
ubiquitous, that, oh, this is destroying not just education, but all aspects of education. Education, not just...
attention span, I think.
Attention span, socialization, kids, you know...
Body image. Yeah.
Kids being able... Just hanging out and talking in the cafeteria, right? Like, what sort of messaging... What do you think would be effective, or what sort of policies? Do you agree with the no phones in school policy?
Absolutely.
I do.
100%.
Absolutely.
100%.
And I also know that I would have been so upset and angsty if my phone had been banned.
Yeah, I wish there were, like, a non-condescending way to send the message, like, this is truly for your own good.
Right.
Like, I wish there was a way to say that it didn't sound super patronizing and wouldn't have made me super, like, angry and self-righteous. Like, because I do believe the only, like, it will make your life better, and it will make your friendships better.
Yeah,
and everything.
Hang out with your friends
better.
In person.
So, like,
literally, the best
advice
I could think of is, like, hang out with your friends in person.
But it's hard to communicate that to people in a way that doesn't feel, like, preachy.
Yeah.
And they hate.
Yeah.
They
hate
it. And there's, like, a lot of, you'll see them online, like, I think they're very sensitive. As a generation, to that criticism, pointedly,
and it's so not their fault.
And it's not their fault at all. Yeah, but it, like, wider legislation, like, it's so
legislation. I think that starts higher up than restricting the phones that are already, like, I don't know. This chain is so left of station. But, like,
it would be like, oh, like a complete.
I'm
change,
like, what, stop the factories?
The US economy.
I mean, literally banning TikTok isn't the worst idea.
No,
I don't think that's the worst idea in the world at all.
Children's, like, not children's, my dopamine receptors are probably fried. Like, the way that kind of social media, which is now replicated on Instagram Reels and YouTube Shorts.
Literally LinkedIn.
Literally every young person you know nearly is on them.
Sure,
one way or another, yeah. And it is crushing us. It is catered to you.
No, it's like a hug. It's just like Endless Entertainment.
Oh my
god. You're listening to Foraging Ahead. Kevin Factor. And you're getting a seat at the conversation of Francesca, David, and Sophie, 23, 24, 25 years old, talking about life as a young adult in America today.
What advice would you give to your younger self?
What age?
You could pick an age. Like, it wasn't, like, back, you know, high school, middle school, though I don't think there's no advice you can give anybody in middle school.
It's not.
No. They won't hear you either. First thing that comes up in my head is just, like, I remember being, in, like, an angsty teenager and just wanting to really only talk to my friends and, like, only keep in my circles and, like, very, you know, literally just classic rebellious angst of, like, I hate everyone in my town, I hate everybody at the school, I hate, like, going to get a coffee, everything takes so slow, customer service, like, I don't know, maybe that's specific to me. But just, like,
the customer service is
I think there's a Kurt Vonnegut letter that he writes to young kids where he tells people that, like, the best thing you can do is literally just get outside and have a conversation with everybody you see. Like, treat everyone like they are your friend when you meet them. Like, I think the scariest thing about the 21st century is just how, in our generation, is like, you are disconnected. You feel so disconnected from everyone.
Everyone's such an arm's length.
Yeah, and everyone is so in their own world. Everybody's on their phone and they're on listening to podcast. Like, you know, when you pass somebody on the street, you're not. They don't mean as much as maybe passing by somebody 30 years ago on a street did. If that makes sense. And just like having an interaction with the people you see and just like interacting with the world more. Like, how you doing? Talking. Like, literally the classic Mr. Rogers, like, talk to your neighbor. Kind of thing, I think, is valuable, and took me moving to Vermont to really notice that improves quality of life.
Yeah,
so much.
I think that I think there would definitely be along the lines of leaning into creating experiences for other people, like, because I feel like there's such a difficulty, there's such a urge towards passivity of like sitting on your couch and watching a movie or whatever.
So easy.
And there's, it takes just a little bit of inertia and a little bit of effort to like do a murder mystery for your friends or
host a party.
Host a party. Yeah. Or like, yeah, have like a themed event.
Hosting parties is big.
Hosting
yeah.
a party is so important.
Yeah. Yeah. And it never, ever. Has ever gone bad for me. Like, anytime I've ever, like, put the effort into making something for other people to do with them, it's always rocked. And I've always been like, oh, I need to do that more. But then, yeah. And I think in high school, especially, like, there's such a fear sometimes of, like, am I allowed to do this? And especially, I think it has a lot to do with the fact of how closely we were monitored by parents and smartphones. It's like, is it okay? Do I need to ask somebody to, like, create a scene? And the people I admire the most, I'm talking about my friend Autumn, created like a music DIY scene that was so cool, and it was so lame when it started, and like she stuck it out until it wasn't lame anymore. And I think that people
so
are
cool.
so afraid of looking lame.
That's so
and
cool.
Being
yes,
climbing cringe
what
down.
Is it? Don't kill the cringe.
Climb cringe
don't,
mountain. No?
Yeah, don't kill the part of you that is cringe. Kill the part that cringes.
Oh, that's good.
That is great.
That's really good.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could you repeat that?
Don't kill the part of you that is cringe. Kill the part that cringes.
Cringe is such a... I don't want to step on your...
No, go for it.
Cringe is so... It's very 2017, like, when we were coming into the age of, like...
Totally.
And also insanely tied to the rise of, like, the alt-right, of, like, videos of people, furries, weird people, like, enjoying themselves in public and, like, acting kind of weird. And just, like, these videos getting posted online and just people, the vitriol, the insane amount of hatred. And everyone in our generation saw that stuff and they were like, I will never be filmed and called cringe, ever.
Yeah, and I think it generally discourages, like, sincerity and earnestness. Not to
right.
a crazy parallel to me, but,
no,
like...
No,
absolutely.
Yeah, I think there's, like, a...
And,
like
reaching
a,
out for connection. Like, it's a big reason of why people...
There's, like, some, like, valence in the air or something that it feels like our generation has, which is this, like... Yeah, this, like, this fear of... embarrassing yourself and that preventing you and like embarrassing yourself in a way that I'm sure is literally born out of the idea that someone will anonymously like capture you and put you online
right
like
because it's a concrete thing
and you will go viral by accident
and
like,
you get
the Coldplay man.
Oh my god
that was someone trying to live their best life
that was someone trying to have a peaceful night
no but it is so crazy that there's a concrete like thing that could happen like we've all been told you know obviously like be yourself and like
what's the worst thing that happens
sure that someone
like,
could film
someone
it
could film you
and
bring
you
online and you get like
your
death threats
death
yeah
you lose your job
yeah
your friends
there are,
just for
cheating on your wife at a Coldplay concert yeah
but
What's yours?
Oh, mine is... One second. I think...
Drum roll, please.
No. Every generation, particularly of women, like, I think has their own unique cultural battle with, like, beauty and beauty standards and the fight to be pretty all the time and, like, being told that you shouldn't like the way that you look and you should buy into a thousand ways to improve it. And I wish... This isn't a wish, but I would, I guess, tell myself in high school, maybe, that looking back, this is so trite, so forgive me, but none of my best memories from that time would have anything to do with the way that I looked.
Literally, yeah.
And, like, there was so... And still, I obviously, like, have this now, but, like, there's so much thinking that, like, with certain improvements, it will affect your life in some way because somebody will notice you or you will feel better about something. And, like, with even, like, a few years of distance, that's just obviously not true because the moments that shine through and stick with you have nothing to do with that. Bars.
Bars?
Bars, what's that?
It's like...
Facts.
It's like preach.
It's
preach.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm saying about my own thing that I said.
Yeah.
So, what are you guys nostalgic for? Are you nostalgic for anything?
Mm-hmm.
Or a previous time? You said something about the 90s.
Yeah. I completely romanticized the 90s.
That's interesting. You're in the 90s. I'm the 70s.
That's... Oh, yeah. The 60s and 70s.
60s, 70s.
Not the
80s. People
no.
Romantic. Red flag. Anyone
romanticized the
80s? Like, oh,
I bet it was really fun.
First song.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry.
So,
would have been fun for us.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I feel like I've spent so much time being like, why now? Like, why do I have to be born now?
In this generation.
Why this generation?
Why for you?
Like, well, especially, like, the boomers, like, obviously they had, like, the best run of it, like, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s.
Ooh.
Like, those are just some great, that's when music and art and new movies are being made in a way that they're not anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then every once in a while I try to, I don't know, just be like, well, this is the time that I'm alive, and I can't change that.
And I guess we get to enjoy all of the art that was made in that time in totality.
Yeah.
Like, people in the 60s didn't get to hear the music from the 70s yet.
Right. Well, that's the Mark Fisher thing where he's like, what culture is now is getting to watch the culture of the 20th century on a flat screen TV.
That's so funny.
That's
you said that?
Yeah, Mark Fisher.
True.
Just like, yeah, which is yeah, just like, oh, I have it all, yeah.
Such a big call out that I'm like maybe not ready to completely follow up, but one thing that I know I feel nostalgic for and that I may not even have experienced myself, but it's just a capitalism that is a little more tethered.
Yeah.
Say that.
Like, it just feels like where we are at in terms of greed.
It feels so mask off.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how we could go lower than where we are right now in terms of just advertising.
Mm.
Yeah.
And you read, like...
The art that's being made.
Yeah.
The art, yeah.
There's so many, like...
Those intellectual property movies.
Yeah.
Like, 70s art... Essays where people are like,
because it's profitable. Like everything that happens every day is for profit. It feels like,
and people aren't ashamed of it.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
That's what it is. That's what's masked off about it.
The concept
of
a sellout.
It doesn't exist.
Gone.
There's no stigma around it anymore.
If you
try to bring that back,
if you tried to tell anyone in our generation who is making music, like, oh, you're a sellout for like doing a Pepsi commercial. It would be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, the only way to get successful in the first place is to randomly go viral on TikTok, which is already
right, so
like engaging
to
with a platform that's meant for, yeah.
Songs nowadays are different than they were 10 years ago because they are primarily made to get a 15-second soundbite that can blow up on TikTok and Instagram Reels and make a profit from it.
Oh.
Like, it permeates literally every sector of our life, it feels like. People trying to profit.
Yeah.
So what is good about your generation that other people like my generation don't quite get?
I think the media literacy point you made is pretty fair.
Yeah.
I think our generation is very funny.
Yeah.
And I think this is maybe a silver lining of social media, although like to what end it's good, I don't know. But like the onlineness, there's like a shared set of like references and like jokes kind of that are on the internet that it feels like our generation taps into in a way that I think is like, well, I actually don't know if this is good. This might be a bad thing. But like there's something I think sort of like, dare I say, communal about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Trauma bonded.
Yeah.
It almost feels like.
Well, what about, I mean, just from what I see, is your generation is so much more comfortable with gender fluidity,
true,
with multiculturalism, with there's a sensitivity that your generation has to other cultures and other ways of being, and is pretty remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could not be gay in my high school.
Yeah.
I mean, you were at your peril. Like, you would just get beat up. And maybe somebody would stop it, but probably not. You know? And now that's just a, like, you guys are like, yeah, so, like, he's
it wouldn't even be, yeah, so, I think that's probably millennials. Would be like, yeah, so he's gay. We all have, like,
there's so much to juggle that it's like,
yeah,
we can't possibly begin to worry about that.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever had the thought of, like, yeah, good for him.
Yeah.
Like, he's
it's
gay.
Do whatever you want as long as you're not hurting people.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. Although there are, it's interesting, like, because I feel like we do pride ourselves on that, but then there's a whole group of people who are going,
yeah, we're speaking for a real slice of the pie here.
These are the liberal arts, college. There are some guys who are driving themselves crazy with, like, trying to revert back to, like, the time where you could, yeah, where you could beat up someone for being gay.
Well, what do you make of the backlash that we're experiencing now?
Manufactured by tech companies.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all internet noise, I think, that's unfortunately having, like, the worst possible consequences.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an algorithm that amplifies and, yeah, just
amplifies controversial bad ideas.
Right-wing ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the people who run it are right-wing.
Right. I have to say I'm not nostalgic for the 90s because I feel like that's when the media landscape turned political and polarized in the way that it is today. Like, the foundation was, I mean, I'd say it's Reagan. And we're not gonna, this isn't a history podcast.
No,
we're
I'd
not.
Say, I'd say that's accurate. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, being your age in the 80s, that's absolutely the sense that we got. Like,
That was the point of no return.
And that we're living in the world that he, like, steered the ship of state into these waters.
It's scary how much influence it feels like Rush Limbaugh's getting on a radio show in the 90s has on.
Well, that was the Fairness Doctrine.
Right, the Fairness Doctrine. And also, I truly do believe that Citizens United is one of the worst things to happen to our generation.
Yeah. You guys feel like you're more politically aware than your parents' generation, or how politically engaged?
I think politically engaged is a tricky term.
Mm.
I think my parents' generation is more aware of, like, conventional day-to-day politics of,
right,
like, which U.S. senator did what to who, or passed which bill. Like,
yeah.
That sounds dismissive, whatever. But, like, I think that our generation's better at larger scale systems thinking.
Right.
and thinking critically about institutions and, like, economic systems and political systems.
Right, because we understand that politics is now, like, ubiquitous. It is inescapable. It is in every part of our lives in a way that it maybe wasn't before.
Right, that is such a... No, I totally agree. Yeah, because, like, I remember just so... Such a small slice of all of our lives was, like, the Obama years, which
yeah.
of, like, I just remember... I remember there being a time where, like, politics was like one thing that you could think about.
Yeah.
Many different.
You could compartmentalize.
And as soon as 2016, when we were all 15, 16, 17, we were.
I was 14.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was 16.
As soon as that happened, it was like. That was, I mean, not that that's obviously not the worst thing that happened, but it, one of the side effects of life was like, we just have to think about this all the time, forever. And I, again, talking about like being nostalgic for like. An age of stable capitalism, being nostalgic for an age of stable politics of like
and regulations.
Yeah,
like,
we're yeah.
It feels like we're back in
the third.
Upton Sinclair's The Jungle.
Yeah, yeah. It feels like talking about Reagan being a turning point from Keynesian economics to like neoliberalism. It feels like we're about to say bye to neoliberalism and enter into a third crazy
yeah.
thing. That's the sense. I would say that most of our that's the real crazy sense is like we're about to stop like globalization and neoliberalism have run their course. What's next?
But what do you think is next? Like, where do you see you guys?
It's a really fun conversation.
Where do you
this is awesome.
Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
Possible.
Where do we see ourselves, I think, is important. Like, we don't know where the world is going. I don't think anything we say about it's going to be that worth the energy.
True.
Yeah. Underwater.
Yeah, Miami.
Yeah.
Can I be so real?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I think that I'm currently 25. I think, like, world forces aside, like, someone with my stable, like, privileged background, whatever, like, I'm gonna be 35, I'm gonna have a couple, a child, and be married or something.
Right.
Like, let's be real.
Like,
I think my life's gonna be,
similarly
I think my life's
parents.
Gonna be pretty normal.
Right.
I think it's gonna be pretty, I mean, who knows, but I think it's gonna be pretty conventional. I'll deal with the same malaise that we have now, amplified. The question of whether or not I should be having these children will be, like, on my mind, but, like, inevitably, if not me, like, many of my friends will have them, right? And, like, I think it's gonna not be so crazy.
I'll be devil's advocate.
Sure.
I think that if I had to do like a best guess, I just don't know if it, this is so like. What is that show on NPR? Planet Money. The like, I don't know if the dollar is gonna make it 10 years, and I think that like, I think that there is such a. Cascading course of events that could occur once the dollar is no longer like the world's currency that I think that the standard track of life that Americans kind of are always able to predict out for themselves is like truly based on like like the Bretton Woods conference, like all of our lives, like our parents and grandparents' lives, like they were always like, you know, oh, like you think the world's gonna end because of like nuclear nuclear Armageddon, but then it turned out that didn't happen. But we're all kind of perched up on a cliff based on the idea that the US stays the global hegemon and that the dollar reigns supreme and that we get to continue to reap the economic benefits of that and that like the types of jobs that we all went to college that going to that college allows you to get
mm-hmm.
a job that, you know, makes you safe and comfortable and secure in the way that everyone should be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's wrong at all to want to be living like that in 10 years, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that, like, the conventional wisdom that it's like, okay, but everything will be okay. I don't know if it will be.
I agree. Something feels different this time.
Yeah. Post-COVID.
Well, now that I mentioned COVID, just quick, like, what do you remember of COVID? Like, what was, how do you think COVID affected your worldview?
I'm going to take this on a very, like, personal my life level, not, like, what I think COVID did to my generation level.
No, totally.
I was super bummed. We were in college. College, as David said, is a time before your period that everyone says goes by really fast. You need to savor every minute of. And, like, basically a quarter of it, I didn't get to have, and it sucked. I was, like, a sophomore in college at a small school where I felt really secure, really happy, felt like I had a lot of friends and I had a lot going for me. Like, I had to go home, and I'm very lucky that home is somewhere that I'm, like, comfortable and somewhere I enjoy, and I, like my family. But it was a chunk of my life that I always wanted to have that I'll not be able to get back. And, like, that's what COVID had forever. Like, there was, at very best case scenario, that's, like, what happens to you, right? But, like, felt like being on the prime of my life in some way, like, everything in my life socially being so exciting, that like feeling of community being so strong, and then suddenly being like, it was just so deflating. And like, I had so much longing to be back on campus and back in the middle of like a buzz like that, that like more than anything I was truly just like bummed. It was just like a disappointment that I didn't get to have that time.
Did you learn anything from it, or did you learn something about yourself during it, or do you feel like maybe when you got back to college you had that much more appreciation of it?
Maybe. I think there was a time, there was like so many awkward, there was such like a long tail of COVID. I mean, obviously it is still a disease that people have and like a problem. But I think in the lingering periods where you could kind of be in a classroom with other people at a distance and you were wearing masks and dining halls or whatever, like, I remember thinking, like, maybe my social battery had kind of just died, and, like, maybe I had changed during COVID, and I actually, like, I used to consider myself a really social person who really liked to stay out and go to parties and whatever, and, like, the version of that I had during COVID, I was just not enjoying, and I was tired all the time, and I was just, like, really relishing a long time, a lot of the time. And then, like, maybe a year later, by the time it was my senior year, and campus felt completely back, and I just, like, completely felt like myself again. And I was like, oh, never mind. That was not some way that COVID has fundamentally changed me. I am a really, really social person, and, like, when the circumstances are taken away from me,
mm-hmm.
it's a real shame, because I don't get to be that full version of myself that I, like, enjoy the most.
Very well said.
Yeah. COVID happened for me my freshman year, which meant that I wasn't in the same swing of things that Sophie was, and I truly hadn't found my footing, and COVID kind of let me quit track, which is so silly, but was really big and kind of changed like the trajectory of like how I was living at college. And I think that COVID actually, I'm pretty glad that it happened my freshman year, because I wasn't in the swing of things. I hadn't figured out what I was doing. And then when I got back to campus full time, like when I was truly back on campus was like my junior, senior year of college. And as soon as I got back on campus, I hit the ground with like, now I know exactly what I want to do. And I don't know. I didn't hate COVID. I lived in Philadelphia for a bit. That was kind of tough. But I listened to a lot of podcasts. I don't know. That was nice.
So you think if it wasn't for COVID, you would have ran track and not done
comedy?
Yeah,
well,
probably. Or it would have been a much more, it would have been a lot trickier.
There's a lot of butterfly effects, I feel like, that go on with COVID.
Mm.
I mean, same for me. COVID happened my junior year of high school. I spent every day of my senior year of high school online. I did not step into my high school, senior year of high school, like barely did. And that was truly horrendous. Taking online classes, I would not wish on my biggest, worst enemy. In the worst, to the worst person in the world, I wouldn't wish having an education that is fully online, because you realize that really the brunt of your education is not the information that you are being taught, but like the way which you go about socializing every day with people that you like and people that you don't like, and your teachers and staff at your school,
yeah,
is a really invaluable part of the lessons that you are learning at school when you're growing up. And I mean, it's kind of the same thing that I was saying earlier, is that I felt very angsty before, and a lot of times like wanted to be by myself, and COVID just really kickstarted me into thinking like, holy shit, that is all we have is each other. And like, there is something so specifically insidious about a pandemic that really just prevents you from gathering and socializing. And I think there is such a stark difference. I was a camp counselor for a couple years after graduating high school and starting college, and there is such a stark difference on kids who like came into themselves before COVID and kids who came into themselves after COVID. Like, their world shifted almost fully to online. Like, the conversations they have and like the things they talk about are majority online things, because that became their sphere. Which is scary to think about.
The coinciding of like TikTok and COVID is,
yeah, it's
couldn't have been better planned. Like, crazy. It's crazy. That's just what everyone did.
That's what everyone I know.
As soon as COVID hit, it was like, oh, well, I'm gonna go into this new app called TikTok, and then
right,
it's like, oh,
because there's people are, like, the world is continuing on there.
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm. Interesting. Any random thoughts? That's very well said. Very. Anything missing?
Ego.
It's interesting, the people who still wear masks in our generation.
Yes.
It is an interesting phenomenon. It's difficult for me to get too worked up. It's not they're doing anything wrong.
Worked up about it.
But there's a type of person where it's,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
relax.
Yeah.
Like, take it off.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
When I went to go watch Friendship, I mean, this is really interesting, but when I went to go watch the movie Friendship, I went to this indie cinema right by my house, and I was super shocked to see these two really cool people from my grade in high school working the movie theater, both wearing masks. And when I went to go give them a hug, they said, "Give me a hug. I'm COVID conscious," they said. "I'm immunocompromised. Don't mind me."
By the way, like, they're the victim in that story.
Right.
Yeah.
I was shocked. I don't really have much insight into that.
Sure.
But I blame COVID.
Yeah. It sucked working in the service industry during COVID. People were not cool about the masks.
Oh,
people were so pissed about the masks. And it was tough because it was stupid. Like, I worked at a restaurant, a pizza restaurant at our college town, and you made people had to wear their mask from the door to the table, and then they could take it off.
Right.
And so it was like
completely counterintuitive, yeah.
Literally just following like the law to the letter. And I would have to have conversations every day with grown-ups. I think this is something maybe our generation is pretty good about. Actually, I would say this is a huge plus. Our generation is really good with customer service.
I agree.
On the whole, way better than any previous generation.
Yeah.
But
you know how to be nice, polite, and normal to people that work in the service industry.
Yeah.
And tip.
And say thank you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The when people having
and empathize.
To,
yeah.
Yes. Literally. Well, I think we all. I don't know why. Yeah. Maybe. I don't know if it's being young or if it's our generation, but it's something. But anyways, these guys would come in, and it was so flabbergasting to me. Where like, they'd be like, "Why do I have to like wear this mat? Like, why are you making me do this? Why am I making you do this? I have a stain on my shirt, man. I'm not making any. I'm not calling the shots in this restaurant. I'm 19. You can do whatever you want, but I have to tell you to do this, or I get fired."